Get a head start on 2025 with CNBC's Big January, the hottest tech event, CES, from Las Vegas. The data, the numbers, the jobs report, and meet the future of biotech and pharma at JPM Healthcare. Check out the Amex Golf Tournament from California, Inauguration Day, and the meeting of world leaders in Davos. Plus, the first Fed decision of the year. Get ahead of the game. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
You're listening to the Best of the Giants.
And the Giants have won!
A weekly mix of WFAN Sports Radio 101.9's best NFL talk to get you ready for game day.
The mess that we saw in Atlanta yesterday, and here's where I'm at with the Giants, and we can clearly get into the conversation about the coach and the GM. Here's where I'm at watching that game yesterday as best I could. They have no quarterback, number one.
Yeah.
They are banged up beyond banged up. And this would be my one question to everybody that wants to, and I think it would be warranted. If John Mara fires Shane and Dable, one or the other, I would understand. But here's the one thing I would say. You want the number one pick at this point. The season's been long over. What do you want them to do? Now, yeah. You want to say you want to make it look better than 34-7. Fine. Until Drew Lock throws that pick six, they were playing well, they were playing hard, and then everything just unraveled from that point forward. But if they win that game, you're pissed off that they won that game because the number one pick might go out the window. You could pick eighth. They lose the game, get these guys out of here. They're terrible. I don't know. This is such a terrible spot to be in because I'm listening to certain experts yesterday saying he's coaching for his job. Got to go out and win the game. Then I got other people sitting, I'm listening to them say, if he wins this game, don't let him on the plane and fire him today. What do you want him to do?
It's gotten ridiculous. And I understand it to an extent, but yeah, it's a position that just putting yourself in Brian Dable's shoes right now, it's misery because basically
it's no win.
The margin for error is so thin in that you are expected to lose, but to lose the closest game possible. And to basically, hey, we did everything right. We checked all the boxes. We played well. It's just the ball didn't bounce our way, essentially. That's pretty much where we're at. Look, there's nothing there. Quarterback, outside of Malik Nabers, there's very little offensively to grab hold of right now as far as guys that you feel like can be a difference maker. Tyrone Tracy, I guess, is one. I mean, he looked better as a receiver
nice
than a
find.
Runner yesterday.
Yeah.
Sure.
No, he's had his moments this year where he's run the ball well.
Right.
When the team was whole.
Yeah.
I mean, when the team was whole, not that they were winning, don't get me wrong, but they were more competitive, and I do not believe in any way, shape, or form that the run game was an issue earlier in the season. They were getting, here's the biggest issue with the run game, and I'll take you back to Washington. Devin Singletary fumbling the football.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, more so than anything, they were getting a push up front. They were running the ball well, and while no one was Saquon Barkley in Philadelphia, which is another story for another time because of the way that team is put together, their run game was fine early on. So that's not even it. It's just this thing has collapsed beyond anything I ever thought it would collapse to the point that it's reached, and it's just a mess.
Let me ask it to you this way, just specifically about Dable, because I feel like in season, that's the easier part to evaluate and analyze because we're seeing week to week game plans, play calling, team's response to him,
sure.
All that, whereas Shane's a little bit more insulated as the season's playing out. So all those things you just said, I don't disagree. I mean, I don't think anyone that's watching the Giants would disagree. But from Dable's standpoint, is it not concerning, though, when he came here from Buffalo and we talked about his ability to turn Josh Allen into what he was and his offensive mind, the play calling and all that? Like, wouldn't you have expected, even with a roster that has its holes, obviously, and the fact that the quarterback situation is a mess, wouldn't you have expected something a little bit better, a little bit more development of certain players, skill position, offensive line? Like, we just talked about, outside of Nabers and a little Tyrone Tracy, I mean, give me the next guy that you're like, you know what, this is a nice find, a nice piece for them on offense that they can build with.
You're not wrong. And we can talk about, it's funny you bring that up because I want to read something to you in a second and I want you to tell me who I'm talking about. I agree, but I do think the quarterback play, it's funny. I sit there and say, you can't pay these quarterbacks $50 and $60 million a year after year four because it tears down the rest of the roster unless you are Josh Allen, unless you are Patrick Mahomes. Average quarterbacks getting top dollar to me is stupid. Yeah. It doesn't make sense to me. And I'll take it back to Daniel Jones. If the Giants would have offered Daniel Jones $26 million a year, not 40, is he really saying, like, who's signing him for more than that? I don't think anybody would have. And it comes down to the quarterback. You want to talk about development? Maybe they didn't develop Daniel Jones. Okay, maybe. Here's what I know. Year one, when Jones was healthy and he ran the ball, they won games. Mm-hmm. Now, I've said this before. I'll say it again. I had the privilege to work with Brian Baldinger this year in Tampa, and I believe he talked about this with BT and Sal because he comes on with them every week. There were plays that were there to be made throughout the course of the season, and as Baldinger would say, he just doesn't either see it or doesn't pull the trigger. You can develop whatever you want. You can't get into a guy's head. And if he's not going to have the confidence to do that, he's not going to have the confidence to do it. Then there were, on one of his Baldy breakdowns, he was showing like guys running free,
yeah,
which tells me the game plan is right. The execution is just off because the guy with the ball isn't doing what he's supposed to do. Now you talk about Shane. I want to read you something and just let me finish before you tell me who
sure.
I'm talking
you
about.
You tell me when you're finished and then I will.
Okay, here we go. Guess. I'm going to give you a pre-draft score and breakdown, okay? This is pre-draft, not post-draft, pre-draft. Production score out of 100, 90. Athleticism score out of 100, 94. And by the way, 91 to 100 is considered elite on this board. Total score of the player before being drafted, 96. Pretty damn good. Analysis, projection, round one. I'm not going to give you the comparison yet because then you will know who I'm talking about if you haven't figured it out already. I'm going to give you the Bleacher Report. Pre-draft grade out of 10, 9.0. Overall rank for the draft, 2. Position rank, 1. Comparison, I won't give you that. Point is, sure thing, first round pick, top 10. Who am I talking about?
It's one of two guys. And based on what you just gave me, I'm going to say Kayvon Thibodeau.
It's Evan Neal.
Okay, that was the other guy.
And I bring up Evan Neal because while I'm not trying to praise him by any stretch, it's been a rough go.
Yeah.
The things that I saw on social media about Evan Neal, I genuinely felt bad for the kid,
yeah,
because he's not good.
No.
And it hasn't worked at this level. And I saw posts from people that I respect in the media that I don't think are trying to be mean, just saying things like, is he even trying?
Yeah.
Videos of him. What the hell is he doing here? What happened?
Yesterday on the second pick six is the one that was everywhere yesterday, where he basically takes a dive at the defensive end's feet and whiffs. Now, and then he gets up and holds his arms up in the air as if Drew Lock didn't do what he was supposed to do, or there was some sort of disconnect, or I don't know exactly. But, I mean, that right there, if you want to, I mean, forget we talk about the quarterback, we talk about that. They had two top 10 picks in, mm-hmm, that first draft. And I'm of the belief that when you bring in a GM and a head coach together, that they're supposed to be, you know,
in lockstep.
Yeah, exactly. Especially since they came from the same organization. And those two players, one worse than the other, have offered you essentially nothing.
Not much.
Now, is that all on the players? Like, at what point do we hold GM?
Here's what I'm tired of doing. I am tired of blaming the coaches and the GMs for these overpaid athletes. At some point, we've got to start blaming the players. And I also hate the art. Well, you can't fire all the players. Why not? How about this? Start sending them off
the
to
NFL.
Crappy organizations.
You can in the NFL.
Right. It's too easy. You know, I'm reading you projections from NFL.com, Bleacher Report,
yeah,
from respected draft gurus. And I know they're not going to get them all right. But how do you get it so wrong? And it's not like the offensive line has been a problem predating Shane and Dable, so it's not just them. But at some point, can we not blame these guys for not putting in enough work, for not doing enough film study, for not earning their paycheck?
We do blame the players.
Not enough.
All the points you just made about all the pundits and people that do this for a living and analyze hours and hours of college tape and go to pro days and scout these practices and everything and the games and the competition. Not one, but two guys that were supposed to essentially be can't-miss players.
And missed.
Bad misses.
Now, I give Thibodeau a chance still.
Yeah,
I don't give
fine.
Evan Neal
he's not
a chance.
As bad as... I mean, Evan Neal was almost unplayable at this point. But Kayvon Thibodeau...
Thibodeau's okay. The problem is he's supposed to be spectacular.
Right, yes. Yes. I mean, based on the investment they made in those two guys and the, you know, the slot in the... Again, having two first-rounders in 1 year is rare. Having two top 10 picks right out of the gate and for them to both be misses?
Yeah.
That's very difficult to overcome. The other quarterback
thing,
aside.
And the other thing, too, with Daboll, and this is where I just, I don't know. If I was the owner, I don't know what I would do from this standpoint. He looks to me, so year one was fabulous, but then your argument could be, okay, well, the previous 18 coaches, year one was good, and then they, you know, they, it feels different. Sometimes there's a gut feel to it, and it sounds ridiculous because I'm not in that building, I'm not around the team, but we know people yeah. that are. And from what I'm told is that he has got control of that team, he knows what he's doing, and he is locked in as anybody. It's just gone awry. The quarterback position is so stinking important. Are we really and I don't know what his, honestly, what his impact with Josh Allen was. And we weren't in Buffalo. Yeah. Who the hell knows? Josh Allen's a freak athlete. Maybe if you were the quarterback's coach or the offensive coordinator, you could have gotten a lot out of Josh Allen, too. Uh-huh. We don't know that. But what I do know is, are we really going to walk away from this without them drafting and trying to play their guy and start over again with a coach that we don't? And Belichick's gone. So he's not, the whole idea of Bill Belichick's career full circle coming to the, that's not
which
happening.
Never made sense to me, by the way, anyway. With
so
the
do you want to try, fair enough. So do you want to try and blow this thing up, start over, and then bring in an unproven coach? It's not an easy question to answer.
No, and I, for most of this year, did not believe that they were going to make a change. Beyond the fact that John Mara said it publicly. Yeah, and the longer we go, and the worse and worse it gets, and thankfully there were no planes flying overhead. Well, there couldn't be because they were in Atlanta. So we'll see what happens, you know, in their final home game. But the longer this goes, and you start to see the graphics, and they showed it on Fox yesterday, and then came out of it with the picture of John Mara there in the suite looking yeah. disgusted. I mean, the dates, the years on some of the ineptitude.
It's awful.
And when you consider, you know, the fact that this has been handed down through his family and the history, the tradition. I mean,
10 straight losses.
At some
Chris.
Point, right, franchise record.
And their 100th season.
Haven't had the first overall pick since 1965.
I know.
I mean, it's the list is growing. And I agree about what you just said, assessment on Daboll, people that are around the team. Like, when I look at him, I don't think incompetence.
I don't either.
And unfortunately, we have thought that about some other guys that have been.
Right. And that's right. That's what I mean.
Jets and Giants.
That's where I mean gut feeling and what you're seeing.
I agree.
And from the things you hear.
I agree. I just wonder if there comes a point where John Mara takes a step back, assesses the entire situation, and we know that he does take into account what the fans think, what people think or say on this radio station, people that covered the team. And I wonder if he just looks at it and says, you know what? We cannot salvage or save this situation.
I guess. I'll ask you this question.
And I don't necessarily know that's going to be right or wrong, because I agree. Yeah.
It won't be until you see the results.
It would be. It would make sense for them to get a shot to pick their quarterback, and assuming that they do end up with the number one overall selection, they're going to have that opportunity. Whether this is a great year for quarterbacks or not, that's a story for another day. But they've obviously started to put the work in. We've seen all the stuff about Shane and the Giants crew being, you know, in Colorado, watching Shedeur Sanders. But then I guess if they do run it back with the same two guys and they get the quarterback, and if it doesn't turn quickly, then you get caught in no man's land again.
I do think, though, with the different, if in fact, I find it hard to believe they're going to win one of these two games.
Yeah.
And the Raiders went out and tried to win, and they won yesterday. And so the Giants are in the driver's seat with that. I do think if you are telling me that Shedeur Sanders or Cam Ward is the starting quarterback next year, I think regardless of who the coaching staff is, I think there's a renewed energy and life to this team, because
course.
The face of the franchise is completely changed.
Yes, but then that's at the start.
For sure. Oh, of course. That's what I said. The results are what matters.
Yeah. And then if you're in a situation next year like the Bears were in this year with Caleb Williams and a, you know, lame duck
sure.
coach, you can see where that can start to unravel and slip away pretty quick.
Real quick, because they don't warrant any more than a couple of minutes, so it's the perfect spot to talk about the Giants real fast.
Yeah.
Their scenario right now, and this has been...
Thank you, Raiders, if you're a Giants fan.
For sure. This is where I don't know what I would do in terms of the coach. A lot of people obviously want to move in a different direction with GMN coach. A lot of people want to stay the course and let them have their own quarterback finally. If they win a game, I said this yesterday, I'll say it again, I'm sure I'll say it Thursday and Friday again. If they win games, you're pissed off because they win games and they're going to take themselves out of the running for the number one pick where they can pick whoever they want. If they continue to lose games, it's the most embarrassing season in the history of the franchise. Yeah. So you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. If you were running this, if you were running the Giants, you would do and say what exactly?
I'm not firing Daboll.
You're not.
No, I think people don't understand, and it happens all throughout the league. And I get that you need stability at that position. And I think from people who I know have been a part of the organization, the guys who play in our locker room, they like Daboll. It's not like there's a disconnect, or I mean, they're just not producing wins. That's, and then there's a lot of reasons to that, obviously. But they like him as a coach. That matters. They are going to have to get it right, and I believe they will get it right. But it starts with the offensive line, right? And I watched clips of Evan Neal. And the last time I was on with you, Gio put a, you know, he had showed me a Baldy's thing of Evan Neal just looking absolutely like trash at right tackle. And I watched clips of him this week, and I'm just like, they got to fix this offensive line, because it doesn't matter who they put behind. If they don't have an offensive line that can compete and fight, it's just not going to work out, especially when their identity as an organization for so long has been able to run the ball and have a sufficient and efficient quarterback. So, but listen, if you have an opportunity to get a Cam Ward or get a Shedeur Sanders, that's what you're fighting for right now. It is as bleak as and grim as it seems. You need somebody at the position, young and who's capable. We have two studs coming out this year that look like it. So, and you have Malik Nabers, so I think he's going to be a stud once they continue.
He's been great.
He's been great thus far. But it all starts with the offensive line. It doesn't matter who you get. So they're going to have to figure out how to get that together.
The one thing that I always struggle with is the whole responsibility of the GM and what and how they put a team together. And I know, listen, Joe Shane's had a lot of misses. I'm not going to sit here and defend him. He'll stand on his own record. But like the one guy, because you brought him up too, and everyone does, and Evan Neal took a beating on Sunday because people were posting videos again and the comments were
nonstop. He reminds me of what happened to Eric Flowers.
Fair. Like,
that's what I see Eric Flowers. I see Evan Neal. And what pisses me off about it, if I was in that room talking to those young guys, it's clearly their confidence. It's not their lack of ability. From the neck up, they're shot.
Why? Because yesterday, like, we were talking about this, and people were killing Shane for the Evan Neal pick. And so I went and I pulled out some of the pre-draft reports on him, Bleacher Report, NFL.com, and a couple of others. And I'm reading it, and the markings were like out of 196 for this, 97 for that, elite talent.
Yeah.
You know, as close
I
to
a watched him. I watched him in college. Right, he was solid.
What happens then?
Confidence.
Everybody would have drafted him like Shane did. Why then? That's it? Why?
Confidence,
where was the
coaching.
Confidence in college, though?
Well,
which he had.
I think scheme matters. I think confidence comes from when you feel like when you get to this league, you have to evolve, right? When I was at Hofstra, I played in a two-point stance, and I played in a spread offense. Mm-hmm. When I got to Pittsburgh, the first thing Russ Grant told me was like, hey, to survive in Pittsburgh, you're going to have to learn how to get in the three-point stance and play out of a three-point stance, because play action is a part of our game. We have to be able to run the ball, mm-hmm. show run, and throw down the field. And it took me a long time to get in three-point stance and practice against a number one defense in the Pittsburgh Steelers. I was going against an elite defense. So I went through a lot of my woes early in my career solely from having understanding, like, yeah, I'm not good now. I have a really good head coach, offensive line coach, Russ Graham, who taught me how to play out of that position and build confidence through practice. Through practice, I was able to get on the field and evolve my game. His game hasn't evolved since Alabama. What he's done in Alabama, he thinks he can get away at this level. You can't, right? Because guys are faster, they study, they're more prepared, they're more talented. So his game simply hasn't evolved. And when your game doesn't evolve, you feel like you can't do the job. And when you feel like you can't do the job, you lose confidence, right? Like anything in life. When you feel like you can, you're confident about doing the job. When you feel like you solely can't, you start going rogue. I promise you, when he looks at tape of himself, he doesn't recognize himself, because that's not what he's been able to do out his whole career. So now he's on a big platform, playing in the media. The team is doing god-awful. They're looking for excuses as why they're god-awful. And right now you're turning into the poster child of one of the reasons why the Giants suck. And so with all that said, I will pull him inside and say, hey, we got to get your mechanics together. We got to figure out what you do well and what you don't do well. And I will entertain bumping him inside, mm-hmm. because he could be protected from the center and get another tackle where you can say, all right, let's just focus on your footwork, your hand placement, your eye discipline, right? Stop lunging out of your set. There's things that you can work on in the offseason. And then tell this kid, you have to build this kid back up, because in Alabama, he was probably the darling, rightfully mm-hmm. so. He was a darling, All-American, and yada, yada, played under Saban. So he was like, man, you're going to be the next great one. Now he's in New York, and he doesn't have a quarterback that can get the ball out fast, and they don't have a running back that can go, you know, run long or whatever. He's not playing a part of a really good offense, so he seems like he's one of the issues. So that's a confidence thing. So there's a lot of things I look at his game. I don't think he's got awful. I think he's just doing things right now to survive on the field instead of thriving on the field.
Brandon Tierney and Sal Licata on WFAN The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the Free Odyssey app.
Ah, yes, and so we begin 10:02 on this midday Monday. Mark Malusis in for BT and Sal. Holiday week, Dove Alex across the way. Number to call, 888-808-1019. We're taking it right up until 2 o'clock this afternoon, and there's a lot to get into for sure. Mania back with the Mets. 3 years, $75 million deal. A move that was broken by John Heyman, I think, at 1:45 this morning. So we'll get into that. A lot of baseball to react to. We'll touch upon the Rangers and Chris Drury. We'll get into that in a little bit. But, you know, it's kind of funny when you look at it. It's like, what do you start with, bad or bad, when you look at the Giants and the Jets? Like, well, which one's worse? Like, where do you go? Like, let's start with Big Blue, and then we'll get into the circus that is the New York Jets. And it is becoming more and more difficult by the week to go out there and defend or make a case for the current leadership to remain in place. I mean, that's just being honest. You know, John Mara, the Giants co-owner, has made it perfectly clear, you know, it's kind of the Mara way. A relevant season is when the Giants are playing meaningful football games. At the end of the season, the losing and the double-digit loss seasons have become well too commonplace. 3 years ago was an outlier, year one of Shane Daboll. And unfortunately, they leaned into that instead of having an understanding that they needed to rebuild this Giant organization, which leads us to today. As the Giants have now lost 10 games in a row, Falcons defense outscoring the Giants offense yesterday. I mean, Drew Lock is brutal. When you're looking at a quarterback in the National Football League, it's amazing that he got the one-year deal that he did from the Giants in the offseason and, you know, came to the Giants, actually looks worse. You know, they target Malik Nabers 14 times. He has 7 receptions, so we don't have to hear about Nabers not being targeted. It didn't really matter. I mean, the Giants led that game at one point in time 7-0. Pretty touchdown pass from Locke to Tyrone Tracy gets the puppies down. But after that, I mean, the Atlanta Falcons just, and especially defensively, and some of the decisions. I mean, Locke had, you know, turns the ball over 3 times, strip sack. You know, 2 of them gets returned back for touchdowns by the Falcons defense. Giants have 10 penalties. We can look at certain plays and trying to grade out effort of this Giant team and this Giant organization. But really what it comes down to, I'll ask you this question is this, is, you know, what is, let's start with the head coach first and foremost. You know, what is Giant football? Like it's a simple question, right? It should be easy to answer. Like what defines Giant football under head coach Brian Daboll? What are they? What do they want to be? You know, growing up going to, you know, the old Giant Stadium many a time, you know, with my dad, you know, sitting there in the cold, especially going to see, you know, when Parcells was on the sideline, Joe Gibbs on the sideline for Washington, being there for a number of Giants and Washington games and all that, Art Monk, Ricky Sanders, Gary Clark, obviously Lawrence Taylor, Joe Morris. But you knew what Giant football was. It was. And those were good times. There's no doubt about it. But you knew what Giant football was. And you knew that they were led defensively by the linebackers. They were big up front, George Martin, you know, Jim Burr. I mean, you knew what they were, Leonard Marshall. You knew that their offensive line was going to be rock solid. They wanted to run it. You knew wind played a factor. They were going to be smart on special teams. They weren't going to go out there and beat you. You know, they weren't going to go out there and beat themselves. They were going to be a team that, you know, you kind of knew what they were. What are the Giants now? Like, that's what you got to ask yourself. Why does it look as bad as it does? Like, that's the question I'd have for the head coach. And, you know, it's easy for him after games to go out there and say it's all on me. Well, yeah, for sure, it is all on Brian Daboll. But my question would be is, then why are you not coaching the entire team? Why are you calling plays? why did it look so different year number one, where it was so refreshing coming off the Joe Judge era, where the Giants looked, I mean, poorly coached, where he wanted to do everything himself, wasn't asking for help, and ended up being an unmitigated disaster? I don't care how good the press conference was. I don't care how good he was, you know, when he initially met with the Giants co-owner, John Mara, and how overwhelmed they were. Joe Judge did not work as a head coach, and you're starting to get those senses, that feeling, when you're looking at the Giants head coach. Because it's becoming more and more difficult here for the hard-paying Giant fan that goes out to MetLife Stadium each and every week, right? That's sitting there in the parking lot, not now, but sitting there during relevant seasons, putting their hard-earned money down, want to go out there and be proud of this franchise and bleed blue, right? Good old-fashioned, as Tom Coughlin used to say, good old-fashioned Giant pride. Well, what exactly are the Giants now? And that's where you look at the head coach and I say to yourself, well, what exactly defines Giant football under this head coach? What are they? Because nothing seems to improve. The Giant defense was really good under Wink Martindale. It was. And I understand Wink Martindale's not an easy guy to get along with. I understand that he rubs some people the wrong way and, you know, it could be a short-term fix. It's not going to be a long-term solution. And, you know, Wink has his guys part of that inner circle and maybe didn't play nice on that Giant coaching staff. But I'll tell you this, Wink Martindale as a defensive coordinator was really good. And when he left that building and left that facility and left that organization, you can't tell me that that Giant organization was not weakened. Well, that had everything to do with his relationship with head coach and Brian Daboll. Now you look at the quarterback, and you want to look at this saying, well, the Giants would be in a much different situation, much better position, you know, say for argument's sake, if, you know, Daniel Jones didn't start the season. Nonsense. His team isn't necessarily a quarterback away. Like, you look at the performance yesterday, well, results are results, right? You look at it and you say, well, Drew Locke's non-competitive as a quarterback in the National Football League for sure, right? But the injuries that have beset this team, like you look at yesterday's game as more of an example, as an eye-opener than the game against the Baltimore Ravens. Because when the Ravens come to town with Lamar Jackson and Harbaugh, I mean, that's a team that can do damage in the AFC playoffs. That's a team that potentially could get down to New Orleans in the Super Bowl. You know, that is a Giant organization that is bringing, you know, a knife to a gunfight. I mean, there is no chance. As I told you in the morning when I was doing the Football Sunday show, just name the margin. You know, if the Baltimore Ravens played a relatively clean football game, minded their P's and Q's, I mean, they could name the number that they wanted to score at the end of the day. That was not a fair fight. Yesterday is more eye-opening. The Buccaneer game is more eye-opening. Not saying that Tampa is this unbeatable team, even though they came crashing down to earth last night against the Dallas Cowboys, but the Tampa Bay Buccaneers were a team that you started DeVito, you wanted to play DeVito, all these things that we saw at the time, and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers came in here and not just beat you, they embarrassed you and they mocked you. Yesterday against a rookie quarterback in Michael Penix, what exactly did you do, Shane Bowen, to go out there and make him as uncomfortable as he could be? I understand he's an older guy, played a lot of college football, whether it be at Indiana or Washington, but what exactly did you do defensively to try and make him as uncomfortable as he could? To the point where after the game, you know, you had people around the Atlanta Falcons saying he played nearly perfect despite the one turnover he had. What exactly did you do offensively? As Brian Daboll has taken over the play-calling duties from Mike Kafka here for the better part of the last year plus, how exactly is this offense improved? Like, it's one thing to look at and say, well, it's the offensive line, it's all this. Where's the vision? Why does everything seem to look worse? Why is this team riding a 10-game losing streak? Why is it there this one game in which the Giants don't go out there? And yesterday they jumped out 7-0 and they got outscored 34-0 the rest of the game. They had 10 penalties over the course of the game. When does it start to look a little bit better? This week against the Indianapolis Colts? And place, you know, holiday week, place that's going to be a quarter filled. Going to be more Colt fans than Giant fans in attendance out at MetLife Stadium? Is it going to be this week where it looks a little bit better? Like, that's the concern you have. That's why you wake up on this Monday, and it is a couple days away from Christmas, Santa about to arrive, you know, holidays, Hanukkah, everything that comes to New Year, we're going to ring it in next week, and you look in and you say to yourself, well, why exactly do you say Coach Brian Daboll deserves more time? Because of what he did in year one, or was year one an outlier, and it's more a case of what we saw last year and this year? And then the other question that you have to ask yourself is this. Let's learn from other people's failures. My mom and dad used to tell me that all the time, right? You look around, you learn from what other people do. Learn from their failures and don't make the same mistake. Now, you might say to yourself, well, why do you say that? Well, let's look to another great city in this country. And let's look to Chicago. And let's look to the Bears. I said it at the time, it didn't really make much sense to me how the Chicago Bears were, you know, getting rid of Fields. That didn't bother me. Drafting Caleb Williams number one overall. And then bringing in a head coach that he had concerns about back in Eberflus. And that didn't make much sense to me. Because the quarterback is the way. We see it time and time again in the National Football League, right? You don't have one, you're in search of one. The franchise quarterback can make up, especially if he is an upper echelon elite franchise quarterback, can make up for disparities within your roster, shortcomings on your team, because he makes everyone around him better, right? You don't need to have everything be the elite of the elite, because that quarterback has an understanding of what he needs to do in order to be victorious. It's a quarterback-driven league, right? This is not saying something that everybody else out there, you know, the guy down at the street corner ordering a breakfast sandwich this morning doesn't know, right? It's a quarterback-driven league, right? So the Chicago Bears go out there and draft Caleb Williams number one overall. They bring Eberflus back. Eberflus ends up getting fired because of the poor clock management at the end of the Thanksgiving game, you know, in Detroit against the Lions. And now the Chicago Bears are in search of their answer as a head coach. So now year number one of Caleb Williams, their franchise quarterback, their difference maker, now all of a sudden you're making drastic change. Because the question you have to ask yourself is this. If you're thinking about this from a macro perspective is, well, I'm not only bringing Daboll back for 2025, I'm bringing him back for 2025 and 2026. I'm going to give him time. Especially if I'm drafting Shedeur Sanders and Cam Ward, because you wake up this morning and because of the Raiders' victory over the Jacksonville Jaguars, the Giants are sitting here. Yes, I mean, they've. If you're going to be bad, be really bad. Well, the Giants, you know, basically said, hold my beer, and they've been that, right? They've lost 10 in a row, and the Giants are sitting there as right now the front runners have the number one overall pick in the 2025 NFL draft, and they need a quarterback. So whether it be Sanders out of Colorado, Cam Ward coming out of Miami, then you got to say to yourself, well, the head coach and Daboll, do I certainly believe in him to be the guy moving forward? Not just for 2025, but he's going to be the answer. Because if you have any questions, if you're the Giants co-owner John Mara, and you can withstand the planes, you can withstand the anger, you can withstand the vitriol, you can, because all the fans are doing are venting their frustration. They have every right to, right? They're paying customers, right? That's why, you know, the Giants, and that's why the co-owner talked about the popularity of Saquon Barkley when he left in free agency. He gets it. It's a business, no doubt. You want to sell jerseys. You also want to win football games, right? So once the Giants start winning, all of this, you know, ceases to exist, but they can't find a way to win. Losing has become well too commonplace. But for Daboll here is, have you seen enough to where you say to yourself, I'm confident in him for not just 25, but for also for 26, because if I'm going to draft a quarterback and I don't want to make the same mistake I did with Daniel Jones, I don't want to do what I did or what the Chicago Bears are doing now with Caleb Williams and what other organizations have done in the past, I don't want to all of a sudden change everything. If I have concerns about him going into 2025, well, then you have to make the change and rip the Band-Aid off now. Because come the spring, come April and May, the Giants are going to be in a position to hopefully draft a player, and if they get it right, that changes everything. And you want to be put, you want to put that individual in the best possible position to be successful. And that it starts with that coach. It starts with his vision. It starts with his ability to develop and get the best out of said players. That's what you have to ask yourself. The Giants stink. I mean, there's no other way to cut it. Should they be better than two victories? Yeah, I mean, they should be. But, I mean, what are we couching in here? Should they have five wins, six wins, whatever it might be? there is a lack of talent. The injuries have hurt this team. I don't think the coaching staff is put in a position to be successful. I think there was a regression when you look at the defensive coordinator as compared to Wink Martindale and Shane Bowen. And I also think Daboll was way too focused on the offense and not being the head coach of this team. I think there's a reason, if you look back year number one, when he coached the entire team and Kafka was calling plays, this worked a lot better. Now you get to the general manager. And listen, you could look at Chicago and say, well, their general manager's staying and they're looking for a new head coach. And you could also look at some of the decisions that Joe Shane has made over the course of time and say to yourself, well, I don't know if I necessarily believe in his vision. And Shane's an interesting case because, you know, I think, you know, being an inexperienced general manager hurt him initially year number one. Leaning into the success of the New York Giants, year number one. Leaning into the playoff push, the playoff season, the victory in Minnesota, and then the learning experience getting routed in the against the Philadelphia Eagles the following week. Learn from it. There was also learning experiences as well. I don't think Hard Knocks offseason with the New York Giants has done Joe Shane any favors in terms of the perception of the general manager. That's just being truthful. And some of the stuff that continues to get thrown out there on social media. But what John Mara has to ask himself is this. Do you believe that the general manager now, after a solid draft class, solid offseason, that this team should be better than two wins? You have more concerns about the head coach than you do the general manager, for argument's sake. Because you can't do it the opposite way. The idea that both need to go is just, I don't know if I necessarily believe in that. I mean, I think they both could get fired. I don't think you keep the head coach and fire the general manager, do what the Jets did with Rex Ryan a number of years ago. I think the one that's on the hottest seat, I think, is the head coach. I think what Paul Schwartz wrote about in the New York Post last week is fair. I think when you look at where this team is, what defines Giant football, the way that this team is playing, the answers you get after the game, even though that really doesn't play into the decision-making, it's a results-oriented business, and this season is really bad. And despite what John O'Hara had to say before the, you know, premiere of the documentary on his father, you know, on the NFL Network, where he told Giant reporters that, you know, and he craves stability. He doesn't want a constant turnover. He doesn't want the Giant organization to be a turnstile, where you're constantly looking for the next guy. He wants to try and stay the course. It's becoming more and more difficult by the week from what we are all witnessing on the field. And that's where Giant fans, you have every right to be utterly frustrated. You have every right, if you're a Giant fan, to spend the $1,500 and have the flyovers over MetLife Stadium. You have every right to look at this team and say, I don't want to watch this anymore. Where exactly is the growth? What looks better? Where is this team improving? And to be fair, it's not even on the margins. To be fair, when you're watching this team week in and week out, it's hard to lock into anything positive. When you're turning to Tommy DeVito for a spark, and I went to Don Bosco Prep, and Tommy DeVito isn't good. That's a problem. Let's head out to Dix Hills. It's Harvey. It's the fan. What's going on, Harvey?
Hi, Mark. How are you?
How you doing, Harvey?
Pretty good. Happy holidays to us all. And we all have a lot to give thanks for. And it's nice that I caught up with you because, you know, I admire your extensive knowledge of sports, even though we disagree sometimes. Okay.
Yeah, for sure. Well, that's what
that's the fun,
all about,
isn't it?
Disagreeing.
Fun of sports talk. I'd like to return to the draft from last year. I think we were both right, as it turns out. You know, a team, the Giants are a team, when a team starts competing for the number one pick, you know it's rock bottom, okay? And not the Super Bowl. So last year, I felt that the Giants should draft an offensive lineman, which was Alt at Notre Dame, and with one of the worst offensive lines ever in football, especially last year. And you thought that it was a great pick for Neighbors, and after the draft, right after the draft, I felt that the Giants, quote, that's my quote, had to draft a quarterback, and I love Bo Nix, I saw him with play a couple of games at Oregon. Not that I'm a quarterback coach. Michael Penix we saw yesterday, and he has skills. Okay, I think he was at Indiana and then 1 year at Washington. I never saw him last year. I think he was injured. And the Giants spent a lot of time with McCarthy. I'm saying the same thing this year. It may turn out okay. They may have their receiver in Neighbors, as you thought. You thought you're absolutely right. And I believe they still have to draft that quarterback. And since they may have that one or two pick, I think, and whether Water Sanders is the best, I have no idea. They have to draft a quarterback. Must.
Yeah, well, they're going to have an opportunity, Harvey, because they're probably going to have the number one overall draft choice. I also think it's, sometimes quarterbacks, I think the fact that Sean Payton fell in love with Bo Nix, I think it's going to be very, very beneficial to Bo Nix. As an organization, you got to go out there and believe in the player and believe that you have the right system. So if the Giants didn't necessarily believe that about Bo Nix, so be it. And he landed in the right spot. Payton was happy with him, loved his experience, loved the fact that he didn't have a ton of negative plays collegiately, loved his leadership ability, and thought he could make it work. But it's also the way that you develop said quarterback as well in order to try and get the best out of said player. Let's head out to Beacon Falls. It's Mike. What's going on, Mike?
Hey, happy holidays, Moose. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, Michael. How are you, buddy?
I'm well. Thanks for asking. It's been a crazy season of football. Did you see what the rookie out of Washington did yesterday? Threw a pick, came back and won the game?
Yeah, Jaden Daniels. Yes, he's very good. Very resilient.
Yeah.
Yes, they love
him. Yeah. I mean, I can only imagine that division next year. Shador, Jalen Hurts, Dak Prescott, Jaden Daniels. I think it's going to be tremendous if the Giants go that way and if they get lucky enough to get him. I mean, I know there's a circus around him in New York, but, I think he... he's won, so I don't know what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah, I think it's either Sanders or Cam Ward. I mean, I do. I think you got to let
How
the
good
draft.
Is Ward?
I think he's more athletically gifted than Shador Sanders.
I haven't seen a single game of his all year. That's why I asked.
But. Oh, at Miami, yeah, he's got a kind of a three-quarter arm delivery, but
right.
He's got a cannon for an arm. He can beat you a little bit with his legs.
Just need the coach.
Shador Sanders is not the athlete that Cam Ward is. But yeah, I mean, if it ends up being Shador Sanders going number one overall, Deion thinks so. Said on a podcast last week that he thinks his son is going to go first overall. And if he ends up being with the Giants, I think he can be successful. I think he's very, very accurate. I think he showed you tremendous toughness, but he's more of a pocket passer than he is a guy that's going to be able to. Go out there and run around like Jaden Daniels can, like Lamar Jackson can, stuff like that.
This guy Penix, I mean, people said he had a great game. I mean, I thought it was okay. I mean,
it was his first NFL start.
It wasn't
start.
His fault, to be honest. I know, I understand.
I mean, it was his first NFL start. He had a soft landing spot with the Giants. Penix can really throw it. He could at Indiana. He did at Washington. Went to the national championship game last year. Lost to Michigan. I think as long as they get out of his way and they don't interfere with his progression, I think Michael Penix can have a successful NFL career.
Well, I think they'll need a new coach for that, but that's a discussion for another day. I think the Bills are going to win it all. I think it's their year. That's where I'm putting my money on this year. I don't know. I mean, it's competitive. What are your thoughts? Who do you think is winning it?
Who do I think is winning it? I think, and mind you, I like the Jets before the start of the year, so that's not going to work out. For some reason, even though it's going to go through Kansas City, I don't think Kansas City gets there. Yeah, I could see Buffalo. I could see Baltimore. Baltimore's defense, especially back end, secondary, concerns me. I kind of like, I think it's either the Packers or the Eagles in the NFC getting through. Ed in Marlboro, New York. What's going on, Ed?
Hey, how you doing, Mark?
I'm doing well,
happy
Ed. How are you?
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays.
Who do you think is going to be the pick? Who do you think the Giants are going to pick if they do pick one?
What would my lean? My lean right now would probably be Shador Sanders.
Okay. Do you think Deion's going to want to get involved?
No, I do not. I do not.
I think he wanted to go to the Raiders, so he was out there. But
no, I mean, Deion was on a podcast last week and said he thinks his son is going to be the first overall draft choice. He thinks Sanders and Hunter are going to go 1-2 in the draft. That's what he thinks. That's what he believes. So, do I think Deion's going to get involved? I do not. Do I think whatever? We all have seen it. The Giants have been out there a number of times, out to Boulder, Colorado, and it's not just this year. You know, the NFL team scout players and have, you know, books upon books, ledgers upon ledgers of guys each and every year that they've played college football to go back and look back on. But when you look at Shedeur Sanders, yeah, they've been out there like 3 or 4 times. It's been well documented. I think you had video of Deion like dapping up, both Joe Shane and the assistant general manager and others with the Giants out there in Boulder. So that's where my lean would probably be right now. There's reports that the Giants are also interested or do like Cam Ward coming out of Miami. You want to be in the position. The biggest thing is you got to draft the right guy, whoever it might be, Sanders or Ward. That guy's got to be obviously the right choice. It can't be the wrong one where the other guy then turns out to be great.
Santa's delivered the Giants, currently the number one overall pick. Santa has delivered a very disgruntled wide receiver to the Jets. Ho, ho, ho. Santa's delivered Sean Manaea back to the Mets. And Santa has delivered a first baseman to the Yankees. All of that and more. Tiki, welcome back from Vegas.
I don't even know what to say.
Ho, ho, ho.
I mean, I guess I could say ho, 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 ho. But there's nothing jolly about this weekend, at least not from a football standpoint.
Oh, I'm jolly.
You're jolly because the game I called. The Las Vegas Raiders hosting the Jacksonville Jaguars. What might have been one of the worst games I've ever experienced. Just from a functioning execution. There was a point where the Jags had 2 straight penalties to put them in like 3rd and 16. And then the Raiders had 2 straight penalties to make it back to 3rd and 6. And then they dropped the pass on 3rd and 6. It was just like, what are we watching?
Well, what we were watching was a lot of Giant fans were watching was just something unfold that right now the Giants find themselves in a position they have not been in since 1965. And that is holding the number one overall pick in the draft. This, of course, after the Giants are bloodied and bludgeoned down in Atlanta with the Falcons. So we're going to cover both teams here in the open, take your calls and thoughts on all of it. Let's start with the Giants. Look, the good news is, right, you called the game with the Raiders and the Jags, Tiki. The Giants do right now. If control their own destiny to get the number,
one overall pick.
Right, great, fine.
Doesn't make me feel any better.
Here's the problem, the path to get there yesterday. We have talked about this endlessly on this show about how hard it is to thread the needle between trying to get high enough to take a quarterback while keeping a regime and everything happy. And this isn't about whether you want Dable or Shane fired. Everybody's fought enough about that. But 34-7 versus the Atlanta Falcons. And 34-7 because you start a quarterback after Tommy DeVito is cleared that throws not one but 2 pick sixes, albeit Evan Neal's terrible at cut blocks and that causes one of them. And then another fumble, which was horrendous. You cannot tell me, Tiki, after what we've now seen with a half of Tim Boyle, what we've seen with a couple starts with DeVito, and now what we've seen between the Dallas Thanksgiving start with the pick six to Overshown, the 2 pick sixes yesterday, how this team and this coach thinks Drew Lock gives this team the best chance to win a football game?
Right.
BS.
All I could do is laugh at it because I've gotten to the point where I don't trust that decisions are being made in the interest of winning. And I'm not saying teams they're tanking. I'm not saying any of that. But I told you guys months ago who Drew Lock was.
Oh, yeah.
Not that he's a bad dude or he's even a horrible quarterback, but there are moments where he is going to make bad and terrible and game-changing decisions. I've seen it since he was a rookie.
Yeah.
I saw it last year in his little stint in Seattle when he was filling in for Geno Smith. He is consistently going to do what he did yesterday. And so as I'm watching this game, because we had the late game, so I got to watch the Giants, unfortunately, with a rookie quarterback on the other side, play not even good.
No.
And still find a way to beat the crap out of the Giants. I found myself saying, forget giving you the best chance to win. Playing Drew Lock almost ensures that you're going to lose. because he's going to do this constantly. And I'm saying he could be a good backup. Maybe come in and win a game like he did in Seattle a year ago. But he's not the guy who you want to put into a situation to try to win a football game. I would rather, to be honest with you, after calling Tim Boyle, have seen Tim Boyle on the field. Especially after I saw that first pick six. And then the second one, maybe not fully his fault, but still, it's another pick six. We know who Drew Lock is. So how the heck can you keep running about there? It got to the point where, I was just drawing up conspiracy theories in my mind. I'm like, they can't honestly think that Drew Lock gives them the best chance to win. So what's the conspiracy theory? If I was going to throw a conspiracy theory out there, you know what I said? Dave's is getting all the heat. I bet Dave's is playing Drew Lock just so he can get Joe Shane in the hot seat with him for paying that guy $5 million a year and basically having to play him. It just made me start to get frustrated and pissed off that he was the backup quarterback that you have to play. He is not a good quarterback. He's a good dude. He is not a good quarterback.
That is an interesting conspiracy theory, and ironically, I'm going to turn this to the game you called. The Raiders win this game yesterday with Antonio Pierce.
Because Antonio Pierce doesn't care about anything else other than winning.
This is what I'm going to say. After the game, did you hear what Antonio Pierce said after the game?
What do you think this does your first-round draft picks? I don't know. Ask the GM.
Right. Talk to Tom Telesco about that.
Right.
That tells me Antonio Pierce doesn't like whatever crap sandwich he's been served with the Raider roster. He's going to coach these guys to try to win the game.
Right.
Whatever is going on with the Giants, we are to believe that this regime of Dable and Shane were on a united front. So either one of two things is true. Either Brian Dable is putting on a good poker face when he's screaming at everybody on the sideline, and he's in lockstep with Joe Shane, and he knows losing these games by playing Drew Lock gets them to that end result of getting the quarterback, or this is starting to be a little bit of a fracture with the regime where you see stories come out. Paul Schwartz floats that story, and I get it was an opinion piece.
Right.
Hey, the Giants may keep Joe Shane and get rid of Brian Dable. Dable's obviously alerted to all of that. Who served him Drew Lock? Who gave him Drew Lock as a backup when they knew that at some point this year they were probably sitting Daniel Jones with this injury guarantee?
That's a good point.
Had to know. And the idea that he ran Drew Lock out there to throw those two pick sixes. And by the way, at any point did it occur to Brian Dable to bench Drew Lock yesterday after the second one? He never even attempted to bench him.
No, he didn't even think about it.
So either they are in lockstep that, you know what, we're okay, we've really been guaranteed our jobs, or you're starting to see a fracture between GM and coach about saving themselves.
Well, the problem for me watching this is that it's not competitive.
No.
Like, watching uncompetitive football is not fun, and it's not encouraging. It doesn't make me feel good despite my desire to see Dave's get another year here and try to figure this thing out. It's just, I can't watch a team get blown out in the NFL. It just doesn't happen.
No.
Right? There's a reason. I mean, every now and then you'll get these stupid spreads where it's like, yeah, that team is favored. What, Tommy DeVito last week, 16 and a half points. Most NFL games are one-score games.
Right.
Or on the verge of being one-score games. So maybe it becomes a 10-point game or a 9-point game or, heck, maybe even it goes to 12. But to consistently get blown out and be non-competitive, especially after taking an early lead.
Yeah.
Right? You get the lead. And it screams of ineptitude.
Yeah,
and I don't want to believe that that's the case.
No. And look, do I think if they had a different quarterback situation, things would have been? Sure. But they also were in a spot where they created the quarterback situation. They could have done a better job at finding a backup plan for the situation they had with Daniel Jones and Drew Lock. I would say this. Everybody complains about the two drafts with Joe Shane, and I found ways to defend him because I like it. I think this is the most egregious of them all because of the situation you knew you were putting yourself in with Daniel
Jones. Meaning who you picked as your backup quarterback.
Yes, and backup quarterbacks are backup quarterbacks for a reason.
Yeah.
This is atrocious. And you see every year in the NFL, every week, hell, the Browns competed at times yesterday with Dorian Robinson. It's the third quarterback.
And he's terrible.
Yeah, and it's the third quarterback of the year. How they could run Drew Lock out there after what they've seen.
I don't know.
Unbelievable. And now Drew Lock's getting an MRI magically, right?
Didn't I say this last week?
Yeah. They're just trading off injuries.
Did I not say this last week? Go find the tape. You can look at it on our podcast on Friday. And it's just humorous to me how Drew Lock starts, or Tommy DeVito starts. He gets an injury. And then the next game it's Drew Lock because Tommy's hurt. And then Drew Lock gets hurt, so Tommy's back in. And then Tommy gets hurt, and so Drew Lock's back in.
It's unbelievable.
And after this game, Drew Lock's getting MRIs. So it's like, just tell us that you don't care who's starting at quarterback and you just want to see both of them and you're going to play them each and every week, every other week. Who cares, right? The season is lost. We're just trying to evaluate. Tell us the truth about this stuff, because the truth is you can't believe Tommy Drew Lock gives you a better chance of winning than any other quarterback on that roster. I mean, I've got to tell you, Tim Boyle looked better than Drew Lock looked.
He did. Yeah, and this is now, we've done enough of Drew Lock with the pick six. It's terrible. It's just terrible, incompetent football. And yesterday, Tiki, there's a moment in the game where the owner, John Mara, is shown in the box, and he immediately sees that he's being shown, and he basically turns around and discusses, like, why are they showing me? You know what? All of you people that have spent money on planes and everything, that's a moment yesterday that hits closer than a plane flying, because you're tired of basically being the butt of the joke on TV.
Right.
So, look, we keep doing this, like, you know, meter of do we think Daves and Shane stay? Do we think Daves and Shane stay? I think yesterday, above anything else in this season, actually was the worst moment for them.
It was.
Because you were facing the first, you know, a rookie quarterback first start. He didn't even play well. You started a guy who had no business starting, throw two pick sixes, to be uncompetitive versus a Falcon team that basically dragged ass to beat the Raiders a week before. Right. It's just inexcusable.
It is inexcusable. And I see the alternatives. So, I was looking, Jason and I, McCourty, my booth mate, up in with CBS, we were looking at the number of bad teams in the NFL.
A lot.
And you don't even think about it until you think about it.
Nine teams with four wins or less.
Yes, nine teams.
Mm-hmm. Like, third of the league.
What are we talking about, right? There's three-win teams. There's what, four three-win teams?
Right.
Four three-win teams, three four-win teams, one, you know, two-win team with the Giants. How are so many teams this bad? And the thing we came up with is, God, it's coaching and quarterbacks.
Yes, that's it. The two most important parts of the whole situation. It's
coaching and quarterbacks. And you look at the teams that have been bad. They have either young quarterbacks or inexperienced head coaches.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, it's not competitive football.
It's terrible.
And it frustrates me. I don't even know how to respond to it because I'm sick of seeing it every single week and having to try to defend the idea that this regime knows what they're doing. Because I watched what Antonio Pierce, he's got an inferior team. He's got three of his top defenders are on IR this season. They've had five quarterbacks in 2 years, and none of them are good. Gardner Minshew, Aiden O'Connell, Desmond Ridder. Hell, Brian Hoyer started for them a year ago. None of them have been good. Yeah, they are in every game.
Yeah, they were way more in the game versus Atlanta than the Giants.
They are in every single game. And so they're playing hard. If they're coaching well, even if they're coaching poorly, I can't watch this Giants team and have any emotion other than what the hell.
Yeah.
You can't get blown out five times in a season.
Tiki, my dad, who I watch every game with, it's the thing we have, it's the special bond we have, it's Giants football, it's linear, it's family-wise. I never thought I'd see the day where yesterday I'm watching a game with him, the pick six happened, and my dad did something I didn't even do. He jumped out of his couch and he fist pumped. And that's my dad. And my dad is like the old school, you do not lose games. And then he cheered louder when I had the Raider game on for him later on. They have beaten down the old portion of the Giants. That is hard to do.
Yeah.
The Giants are family to people.
Right.
Like, that is lineage. And the old school, prideful Giant fan now has gotten beaten down to the point where they're doing the unthinkable.
Yeah.
Like, that is how bad it's gotten. It takes a special kind of regime to do that. So, look, I'm not going to plant the flag and tell you I want these guys fired still.
I don't either, because I like Daves, and I think he's a good coach.
But I'm done fighting with those who do.
You're right.
That's it.
If that's going to be your opinion, right, I'm not pushing back on
it. I can't. I can't push back on it. I question whether they're going to get a better head coach in here than that. But nonetheless, the day ends with the Giants in control of the number one overall pick, which, if you're going to sit through this garbage, and you want to argue about trading away, drafting, we could do all that throughout the show. But if you're going to sit through this garbage, you might as well have that top pick.
So we opened the show talking about the football locals. It is a football Friday, and as bad as the teams have been, we only have two more of them, really, as far as the regular season goes. So when we were talking about the Giants, and your sense was you think that they're going to run it back with Dable and Shane, and we said, hey, you know what? They probably should get their shot to draft their quarterback. So let's play that out and say that they do end up with the number one overall pick, and they make their selection, either Shedeur Sanders or Cam Ward would be the expectation. Okay, now Dable's got his guy, and they're going to start over fresh with the rookie, and there's hope and expectation and upside and all that. But as we've seen, and we heard from Boyle play the clip last hour about the fans in Chicago booing the team last night with Caleb Williams. So they went into this year with a tricky dynamic. Rookie quarterback and a coach who was essentially lame duck situation with Eberflus. Now, defensive guy, not offensive guy. But because of what's gone on the last couple of seasons here with the Giants and the frustration, a lot of people want Dable out. They've had enough. So you start the year, rookie quarterback, and hey, things don't get off to a great start. Offense isn't humming. They're not scoring points. Teams losing games. That's the other side of it, right?
How does it look, though? Yeah. You're right. That's worst case scenario, 100%.
Not even worst case, but just like there's going to be growing pains. And yes. I just wonder how that's going to play. And then all of a sudden, that it's already a lot of pressure here in New York. We've seen it cripple other young quarterbacks for both teams at times. And now you put a number one overall pick in this market with the Giants, with a head coach who's coming off two bad years, historically bad right now in the 100th season of the franchise. And if the results aren't there early, fair or unfair, and we all should show a little bit more patience and understand it's going to take time. I just wonder how that plays and how quickly the fan base will start to audibly turn on coach, quarterback, combination, and then all of a sudden, you want to foster an environment for this young quarterback to grow and develop, and then the coach might be coaching for his job. You can see where they're on different timelines, and they could put them in a situation where they're not exactly aligned.
But I'll say it again. That, to me, is worst-case scenario, because I think it depends on the way it looks. Sure, if they are losing games next year with a rookie quarterback and they're losing games 27-3, they continue to not be able to put up score touchdowns, and they look like the same team, I agree with you. And that's worst-case scenario. But if you get out to, let's say, a 1-4 start, but you're losing games and you look like an NFL football team, and maybe you're losing games because in big spots in the fourth quarter, your rookie quarterback is making mistakes and you're losing games 31-27 or you're losing games 27-24, and you're in these games and there's actually something to watch and you can see the future, I think it's all in the eyes. You got to see what you see as opposed to just reading box scores and game stories. So you are right. There is a worst case scenario that they look the same. It feels the same. It's not working. And oh my God, by week 8 or 9, we're going to have to go in a different direction and we've got a mess.
He's not going to survive. If it's as bad as it's been, like you and I are both going on the assumption. You asked me earlier, do you believe Dable can coach or that he's a good coach? And we both,
Based on nothing.
Both said yes, right, exactly. Just gut on feel. A whim, gut feel, right. So if we ultimately are incorrect and we say, well, you know, we gave all these reasons why it hasn't worked the last couple of years, and now they get the young quarterback and he gets that chance. And if it doesn't go well, I could see it very much turning into a situation like it was with the Bears.
You're right.
And he's probably not going to survive the year. And now you're taking your number one overall pick that you've invested a lot in, obviously, and you're going to put him in a situation now where you're firing the head coach, who in this case is an offensive coach. He's the play caller. It's his offense.
But here's what it's going to come back down to. How much do you believe in the coach?
Yeah.
You know, if you fully believe in him, regardless of what the last 2 years have been, and I know that's hard to do. I get it. But even you pointed out, you know, year one with Daniel Jones was a playoff year, and they figured out ways to win games. They did score points, and they were creative with the way they used him.
And that caught us by surprise. We didn't expect it in that year.
No one expected it.
Yeah.
And it did catch us by surprise, and it earned him a big contract, which is a big part of this too, by the way. Mm-hmm. Year two gets blown up with an injury, was terrible, and then this year was just a mess. I don't know, there's no other way to put it other than, and I know you guys laugh at me, I will come back to, you know, the game in Washington. I don't know where the season goes if they actually win that game that they should have won 6 different ways. The season went sideways. So now, how much belief do I have in this coach that I brought in to where I am going to basically sign off on as if I just hired him again? I'm giving him a fresh start and a clean slate, and I'm not going to wilt to the pressure of the fans booing. And again, it will depend on how it looks. So you can't answer it until you see it. But I do think the scenario you paint is the worst case scenario.
And me bringing it up is not, I'm not trying to have the conversation of, well, this is why maybe you shouldn't draft the quarterback. It's more about the Dable decision, because that's what's on the immediate forefront here for John Mara
over
these next couple of weeks. Maybe he's made up his mind already. We don't know. But that's what's up next. Once this season ends, we get to Black Monday and we find out, you know, you wait for the smoke.
But that's where I said to you before, though, Chris, like, if not Dable, who, again, I don't know how much of a great offensive mind he is. I really don't. I know what the track record was in Buffalo, but I also see how good Josh Allen is. And sometimes those guys just stand on themselves.
Yeah.
Who knows? If not Dable, I'll come back to then who? You know, if it's not going to be, and I'm taking Ben Johnson out of the conversation because I just, I don't know. I don't know that he's coming here. I don't know that he would want to come here. I don't know that he wouldn't either. But if I take him out of the mix and I look around, you better have a guy that can coach a quarterback.
Yeah.
And you also better have a guy that has control over his team, because you're going to have a big personality coming in here with the number one pick. So what, like a friend of mine who's a Giant fan, a lifelong Giant fan, he keeps saying Spags, Spags. And I understand that. But you can't bring him in here with a rookie quarterback. Like, that to me is now, that's backwards thinking.
I love Spags, and I have a ton of respect for him. I just, to me, I don't even know if he wants to be a head coach.
I don't either.
Yet.
I'm just saying there's that thought out there when you start thinking about other candidates. Well, it better be an offensive first guy that can handle a quarterback,
yeah,
because that's going to be your most important piece now coming in.
Yeah. And I'll say this, you know, we're talking about this Dable Shane situation. I know Steve Serby had this in a column for the Post, and I couldn't agree more. It's got to be both or none.
I agree with that. It's not one or the other.
No, I don't think you can split this up and bring one back and axe the other. They were brought here together from the same franchise. Everything was supposed to be, you know, kumbaya, in sync, on the same page. So splitting them up, I don't think that answers anything.
Plenty of equal blame goes around.